Welcome to On the Docket with your host, Calvin Carter. Each week at this time, Redeemer Broadcasting examines an issue or topic of interest to our listeners. Please stay tuned as we find out what's on the docket today.
Welcome again to our program. With me today is Jean Allert, founder and executive director for the Samaritan Women. Jean, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Calvin.
Jean, let's start off for listeners who may not be aware. Can you give us a description and a brief history of the Samaritan Women?
Sure. We started in 2007 when we established in the Baltimore area the first long-term restorative care program for victims of domestic sex trafficking. We acquired this property and did that with a lot of faith and not a lot of plan. But it was an effort where we just were following the lead of the Spirit as far as we knew that this was a problem, sex trafficking, not only globally, but here in America, and we knew there was a deficit of services. So with thousands of volunteers across the region, we renovated the properties and opened up to serving young women in 2010. And so since then, we have served over 100 women who've been referred from across the United States, women and girls, and provided them with whole person care, academically, vocationally, spiritually, socially, self-care, and with the goal of reestablishing them into productive members of society and into fellowship with community.
Now, moving these ladies back into society, that is part of, I guess you would call, your restorative program?
Yeah, we have created a design. Over these years, we've created and begun to understand that there's different phases to care. If any of your listeners are familiar with stages of change, you might mirror to that. But in the very first phase, which for us is around 90 days, is a high ambivalence that individuals relapse often. They are very ambivalent about change. They're very fear-based and often still exhibiting a lot of the trauma response behaviors. We see a stabilization start to occur after about 4 to 6 months and really start to see productivity and an opening up to hope and a new life around 9 to 12 months. So our program actually doesn't have an upper limit. We have women with us that have been here 5 years.
As folks would say, Rome wasn't built in a day, and restoring a life isn't built overnight either.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you think of the years that went into destroying the person and the number of people and relationships that may have failed her, harmed her, contributed to the pathway that she had to walk, it's going to take as many of us to help in restoring that and bringing that back and giving her other role models. Oftentimes they come in and they're so disbelieving that anybody would care about them without expecting something in return. And it takes a long time to undo that mental model.
We tend to think of women in this situation in a point in time, you know, when they are recognized, when we are trying to help them. But their lives have been wrapped up in this. And some of these women, I would think, have been wrapped up in this for quite a while.
94% of our population were sexually abused as children, some as young as infants, on average between the age of 5 and 8 years old. So we have to understand that abuse has been their life. This trafficking is, in some tragic ways, more of the same. I was just down in a southern state, Kentucky specifically, to meet with their governor's office this week about the prevalence of familial trafficking. And we have this happening across the country. It's not unique to Kentucky, but parents who are selling their children for money, for drugs. And so it's happening within the home. The abuse is originating largely in the home, regardless of socioeconomic. And so, yes, we're looking at a long trajectory that we step into and try to interrupt that direction and show her, model for her a new way, a different course of life.
Your visit to Kentucky, was that related in any way to your shelter mentoring program?
We are working with some startup shelters down in Kentucky. Yes, part of this was, it is January, it's Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and their governor was making a proclamation about this. We have a traveling exhibit that helps to bring a real picture of an actual survivor into our lives. We call it the encounter. And so this traveling exhibit was established at their Capitol so that the general public and the lawmakers could go through the exhibit and be touched by the plight of these children and where they end up in the world of trafficking.
I was on your website, folks, that's thesamaritanwomen.org. That's all one word, thesamaritanwomen.org. I wanted you to touch on the Institute for Shelter Care. This is a national objective, correct?
It is. We've been doing studying of the victim services landscape and really who's out there. You know, after about 10 years of receiving referrals from all over the country, we were looking at what is that deficit and why are we seeing such movement. And we have identified about 120 active shelter programs across the United States, which equates to just over about 1,000 beds. Now, the federal estimation is there's over 100,000 victims, child victims specifically, in the United States. So if we have just about 1,000 beds, we are woefully inadequate. So we did some real prayer and discernment and realized that we could have a greater impact if we became a force multiplier, that if we, much like a church planting model, if we can help others get into doing this form of ministry, understand how to do it well, have a collegial and supportive community, have accountability for these agencies, that we could raise the bar not only in the standards of care, but also our parallel goal is to increase access to care. Our vision is that any survivor anywhere in the United States should have access to qualified, compassionate care.
Just like illicit drugs or problem gambling, there has to be an audience. There has to be someone with a desire to be involved in this. How do we change the mindset? Are we working to get people to change the way they view these situations that maybe they don't want to get involved?
It's a struggle. This is not a slam dunk where you can say, you know, clean water is bad. And we can all agree on that. We would like to say that the buying and selling of people, that we would all agree that it's bad. But if we agreed, we wouldn't have the magnitude of the problem. It wouldn't be a multiple billion-dollar industry. We have some keen challenges. We have some cultural conditions where people don't want to talk about sexuality, abusive sexuality, violence against women. So that's a barrier. Certainly, we have people who are fueling this industry, and some have appeared in the news, in mass media lately, so we get an idea for the amount of money and influence, political, financial, that can be involved in this. So that works against us. There's also a movement in the United States now, in certain states, to legalize prostitution, to what is called full decriminalization, which would make not only the selling of sexual services, but the buying and the brokering. So it would essentially make, in the vernacular, johns and pimps and prostituted persons would all operate with impunity. And so it would just be a part of our free market system. And so there are several waves of culture that are working against our being able to get real traction because we don't all see the problem the same way.
October 10th, 2018, you held at the Museum of the Bible in D.C. the Christian Abolitionist Symposium. It looks like it was quite an event. That's also covered on the website, thesamaritanwomen.org. Was this part of the topic discussion?
It was actually our opportunity to bring together people of faith in a variety of sectors across society and across the United States to engage in a dialogue on how we raise up the church in all of its forms and in all of our expressions, but how we get the church to engage in this issue of modern day slavery. And so we use that as our occasion to announce the Institute for Shelter Care and our vision for planting upwards of 30 new shelters across the United States over the next 5 years, but also to engender the support, not just financial, but hands-on support of persons who really need to see that there is a plan and there is opportunity to engage, and we can, I don't want to say solve the problem, but we can make a really good dent in it with collaboration. So I'll give you an illustration. We need to engage the academic community in this work, because oftentimes people don't move if they don't see the numbers, if, you know, certain laws don't go forward if we don't have good data. Well, we need the academic sector to be thoughtfully engaging in this topic and with service providers so that we can provide good data and good research so that then our advocacy folks can do what they need to do. So that was the Christian Abolitionists. We've been asked to repeat the event. We probably will. Who knows? Maybe in 2020.
Now, you had an event recently, if you'd like you to tell our listeners about, Fight for Freedom.
Yeah, that was something that an organization did for us. So this is a boxing club, one of those fitness boxing clubs. And they said, hey, we want to be helpful. Here's what we can offer. And so they hosted an event where they invited people to come in and pay to box for the day. The day was organized around 12 rounds of boxing, and each round was dedicated to a different aspect of the issue. So we had opportunity to educate folks while they were having a good time and a fitness expression, and also share with them some learning about the issue so that they could leave better equipped to raise the dialogue. And so it was quite successful. I think the key point is that that was an organization that operated from their gifting. They weren't trying to be a shelter. They weren't trying to, you know, bust door downs and go rescue people. They said, here's what we do. Here's what we have. How can we leverage it to help? And I think that's what's going to be exciting going forward, is when we see whether it's companies or civic groups or individuals who say, how can I bring my gifting to this cause?
It sounds like a great example for other organizations. So folks, if you have a group or an organization you're involved in and you see an opportunity, here's something to emulate.
Absolutely. And if you want to kick around some ideas, we'd be happy to talk with you.
Let's talk about another idea that you have, something that's ongoing, the Salon Challenge.
Yeah, that was actually born out of some research that we had done and a surprising phone call that we got from a salon in Maryland. And the phone call was a panic from the owner, who had said that she was getting an increase in phone calls from men who were calling. Her establishment's called a spa, and like a day spa. And she says she's starting to get phone calls from men who are asking for very inappropriate, albeit legal, services, thinking that just because her legal entity is called a spa, that it must be one of these illegal massage parlors. And so that prompted our doing some research, and we come to find out that the beauty services industry is seeing more of that across the country, where there is a maligning or assumed maligning of those services, assuming that they are offering up, you know, like I said, illegal massage and other sexual services. And so they stepped in. We've had some salons step up and say, gee, we'd like to better educate the community, not only for the good of our business, but for the good of the cause. We also have to recognize that women who are exploited might frequent these establishments. And so the more educated the salon personnel can be about indicators and having intelligent and thoughtful conversations with their patrons, they may be in a position of identifying a victim as well.
For owners or managers of salons, is there some contact information you can give them to become more aware?
Sure. We have some information about the Salon Challenge on our website, but they can also contact us directly. They can just do salonchallenge@thesamaritanwomen.org. They can send it to info. However they get to us, we would give it to the right person. We have an individual who oversees the Salon Challenge relationship.
Jean Allert, founder and executive director for the Samaritan Women in Baltimore. Thank you again for coming on our program.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Redeemer Broadcasting. Be sure to be listening to Redeemer Broadcasting again next week at this time to find out what's on the docket.